Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Hello and welcome, rugby lovers. Welcome back to another episode of Rugby World Cup Daily. I'm your co-host, Tom Deason, joined with Georgina Robinson, and we are separate again after a Wallabies victory over Georgia. Where are you at the moment, G?
Oh, I'm in Tokyo, in another part. I actually don't even know where you are. Where are you, Tom?
Neither do I. I just got off the Shinkansen from the Shizuoka region with a couple of journos. We sprinted after the match to get a media bus, and I am somewhere in a little dingy hotel preparing for a typhoon. I have my supplies. I have two Kit Kats and three bottles of water, and picked up some noodles from a journo that I passed on the way here, ready for this storm that's going to hit us on Saturday.
Good times, hey. I did an emergency grocery shop this evening after filing all my gold for Saturday's paper, and walked back after jostling in supermarket aisles for dried noodles and bottled water. Walked back and saw people more or less going about their daily life. Cafes were still full. I actually spent the day in Ginza at a Starbucks, filing from there. Ginza was still full of people, full of tourists. And when I got back to my local neighbourhood, it was also just, you know, people on their bikes coming home from work, people still in work, people doing their grocery shop. People were definitely stocking up on supplies in case they lose power on Saturday. But on the way home, I looked up and at one stage and saw a guy who was taping all of his windows on the sixth floor.
Oh, no.
I know. I mean, he was the only one who was taping his windows. I think I get the feeling, you know, things are pretty robustly built here, given their, you know, a familiarity with typhoons and earthquakes. But still, it's one of those unsettling images when you look up and some dude's, you know, doing the every angle tape in every direction on his windows in anticipation.
Well, yes. Well, we did both manage to get in back into Tokyo. I am on the 11th floor of this hotel. I didn't really know whether to ask whether it's best to be higher or lower, fingers crossed. But we wait and see for Typhoon Haggis, or whatever it's called, Hagibis.
Hagibis, which means speed in a Filipino dialect, I'm told.
Really? Interesting. There you go.
And record wind speeds predicted to boot, so at least it fits the bill.
There was, aside from all the, as a number of our colleagues, not Australian, probably UK press are calling it, the chaos of the typhoon, which it is pretty chaotic, to be fair, there was a game tonight. Gee, the Wallabies got up 27-8, a bonus point in the end, a couple of late tries. They get through to the quarterfinals, almost certainly against England. What did you write about tonight?
Oh, look, if that was a bonus point win, I'd be reviewing the rules. I mean, would you give that extra points? I mean, would you give that a high achiever kind of a rating? I don't know. The scoreline is what it is, and the conditions are pretty nasty. But I kind of sort of took the long view and said, okay, now all the warm-up games are done. Are these Wallabies World Cup contenders? And bottom line, I'm not convinced. Read about it on rugbyheaven.com.au or smh.com.au/sport. Let me know what you think. You may vehemently disagree, and believe you me, I hope I'm proven wrong. But I'm just not seeing anything remotely. It's not a wind surge, dear listeners. That's just traffic. I'm not seeing anything remotely resembling I'm a World Cup winning performance from them. Like, they've certainly not produced that for 80 minutes, and I don't even know if I've seen it for 40. So, you know, there are really, really good parts, but I just don't feel like we have the accuracy or the strategy to beat a New Zealand or a South Africa or indeed an England. And obviously England, the country Australia face in Ota in 8 days' time. What did you make of it, Tommy?
Well, when you look at some questions that perhaps needed to be answered, and this is not just from what we're talking about, this is Michael Checker and what he wanted to see from this game. I mean, slow starts. Hard to say that did improve. I mean, it was nil all after, how long, at least 20-odd minutes before Nick White went over from just behind a ruck. They sort of threw a little bit of a dummy and dived over. The other thing was discipline. You know, the Wallabies were on the right side of the penalty count. I think it was about...
definitely were.
You know, 15-7 at one point, yeah. You know, by the end of the game. But when you look at a guy like Issy Naisirani, yellow card, clear contact with the head, you know, sound like a broken record. But that's, I think by that stage, it was the third Wallabies yellow card in the space of about 100 minutes of footy when you go back into the Uruguay game. Look, you know, you've touched on it. That could cost them in the end, couldn't it? Like, I know it's obviously against Georgia, always going to win, quarterfinal assured, but, you know, these guys have to be so diligent when they are cleaning out, and, you know, he has to be getting lower there, as a number of people have discussed in the aftermath as well.
Yeah, there's just no question there. And the thing is that if the referees are doing their job, and this is where the heat comes on World Rugby and they're officiating, then England is just as vulnerable. But certainly on the Wallabies' track record, two yellow cards last week against a team who were intentionally and strategically carrying low and dipping into the tackle, and then a card this week. I don't know. I just, you know, Michael Checker said I want zero. So he didn't get zero. He got the yellow card. That's not great. And you make a good point about the starts. It wasn't a great start. I 100% take the point that the weather was terrible. But even on that note, the Wallabies refused to adjust their game in any meaningful way. And so, sure, we know they're going to go down dying as a hopefully not dying, but they're certainly going to go down as a team that runs the ball. So let's just pray for sunshine and blue skies in Ota next weekend. I don't know. I just, you know, yeah. I mean, I think back to 2015. First, I think back to 2011 when there was some really patchy results and the pool game against Ireland caught them napping strategically. Pocock was out. I think Ben McCallum came in and, Ireland really targeted them and beat them. And that kind of, they made it through the quarterfinal thanks to David Pocock and arguably Bryce Lawrence, the referee at the time. But it was, you know, it was by no means a one-sided, utterly convincing, compelling pool progression. And then 2015 was that. It was, you know, convincing win over convincing win over convincing win against a number of different teams, Fiji, Wales, England, the three off the top of my head that required really different game plans from the Australians and different skill sets. And either way, Australia found a way and had the smarts to do it as well as the conviction. I definitely think that England, for instance, they're under Stuart Lancaster at the time, and now they're under Eddie Jones. They're strategically a much more astute team and are better prepared tactically, physically and mentally for sure. So they're a much tougher opposition now. But, you know, when you think about the kind of momentum it takes to storm through to a World Cup final, Australia had it in 2015, and I think we all know what it looks like. We all know what it feels like. And I just don't see any of that today, this year. James Slipper talked last week in the wake of the Uruguay win about momentum. and I guess they've got momentum, but it's not really the kind of snowballing momentum that you'd want to see. And when I think back to that Springboks All Blacks pool game, the first one of the tournament, or the first clash in that pool in the tournament, I just remember Beauden Barrett being bundled into touch with a look of utter, oh, I don't know, utter hunger on his face. And I mean, he looked like this is, you know, this is a playmaker where, you know, who's mild mannered and does a lot of yoga and certainly is scintillating on the field, but is, I've never seen that kind of hunger and aggression in his eyes. And he'd just been bundled into touch, but he was like a coiled spring. And apart from Jack Dempsey, I haven't seen that in the Wallabies. And I just, I mean, that's the kind of team that wins a World Cup, a team full of those blokes or prepared that well. And I'm not sure the Wallabies have that. I'm sorry, I sound like a real Debbie Downer. Maybe I'm terribly anxious about the incoming typhoon, but when I think about what they're going to need to get past England, I'm just not convinced they have it. Well, I haven't seen it anyway, so maybe they have it, but we haven't seen it. And I don't think anyone can argue with that.
No, I think that's a fair point, G. If they bow out next Saturday in Oita, is anyone really going to be surprised in the fair dinkum department? They're none from six against England. Michael Checker has already started, it's obviously not a war of words, but just started his last response tonight in the press conference was words to the effect of, oh, well, Eddie thinks they've had the best preparation possible because they didn't have to face France this weekend. So, you know, they're favourites, all but said they were favourites and they should win. So,
game on. It's going to be a good week for the journalists in Japan and the readers who can see the back and forth between the two great Australians. I mean, it's just a great matchup on and off the field, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Not to mention the English and Australian media packs will be going hard too.
Oh, we're going to have a limited time, though, by the sounds of it. So there's some talk that because of the typhoons, you know, we understood that the Wallabies were umming and ahhing. The bullet trains were cancelled on Saturday, so that means they weren't able to do that as per schedule. There is some talk that they will go to Odawara, which is where they were based before the World Cup, before their Fiji game. Spent a few days down there, so that would be interesting. There's some talk of maybe even as late as Wednesday before parachuting into Oita, which they're initially supposed to go on Monday. So that could change the dynamic of the week. And then just some other things off the top that we'll have to obviously keep across will be the Kirtley Beall concussion. They have an 8-day turnaround, which helps there. Michael Checker said in his press conference he seemed to be in reasonably good spirits in the sheds. But, you know, you don't ever really know the full extent of a concussion, as we've seen numerous times. So that will be a big talking point this week. What else?
It will be a big talking point. Jordan Pataia got through 57 minutes or thereabouts. That was, I guess, encouraging. I know I was bullish about starting him against England. I still think they should, but probably was trying to go the full 60 and didn't quite. So we'll have to sort of see what's happening there.
Yeah, I mean, got his hands on the ball. I think it was 8 times and, you know, probably a little bit quieter than previous weeks. Reece Hodge comes back into the mix, so that will be very much a talking point. Yeah, Justice for Hodgie. I thought James O'Connor reasonably quiet. Sami Kerevi, you know, took a number of carries, but at the same time, that midfield was reasonably quiet. You go back to a guy like Tevita in a big game against whatever England dish up, I'm not sure. Matty Tamua, I thought, was pretty good in the 10 saddle, but judging by Checker's comments earlier this week, you'd think Christian's going to come back and play 10. Nick White, on the other hand, I thought was excellent with wet ball, considering what he had to deal with there. You know, a halfback's nightmare, those conditions tonight. Thought he was pretty good. Anyone I've forgotten, G? I thought the forwards overall were.
Tanyala Tupou made his presence felt, which is nice and exactly the sign you want coming into a quarterfinal. You want a guy who's not content to be in the, you know, be outside the 23. You want a guy who's like, F you, mate, not that Tanyala would ever swear, but I'm going to show you. So I tentatively wrote that, you know, some tough love had worked there from the coaching staff and the selectors. The message has been delivered and he's producing some of what people expect from him as the highest paid prop in Australian history. Last week, anyone forget that?
He was good tonight, wasn't he?
Have you ever seen a... I know we laud Malcolm Marks in the front row for South Africa and Coles for the All Blacks. And, yeah, that's true. Perry Whipper is a halfback. Oops, my apologies, the great New Zealander. I've never seen a tight head prop chase down a back. I thought that was just beautiful. And look, Rob Simmons for his 100th was great. And again, Jack Dempsey, we saw a lot from. I thought he was at the bottom of that maul to score that try. And he had a number of good carries. But the handling errors were pretty damning, those stats. I know there were bad conditions and it probably got worse, but no excuse, I don't reckon.
David Pocock, a couple of turnovers there, number seven.
They were committing a number of people to the rucks there, weren't they? I mean, even not just on defence either. They were definitely trying to, they amped up their efforts to keep the ball even on attack. And I did hear in the commentary after the match, and I thought this is a reasonable point worth noting, that Georgia, while outside the top 10 internationally, is a good warm up for a team like England, given the set piece strengths, the physicality, the power game. I'm not saying they're anything approaching the standard, or that what the Wallabies produced tonight was okay for a quarterfinal against England, but not bad preparation. And as Michael Checker said, just gave the Wallabies another chance to find a way to win, which is always encouraging.
And the fact as well that Australia had a stack of ball, stack of territory, made 47 tackles all night. I know it obviously isn't great for the body running into a tough Georgian defensive wall, but, that is one element too, which might help them in the long run. 8-day turnaround too. But, look, we're at about the 17-minute mark.
Oh,
but
that went quick, Tommy.
Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun talking about the Wallabies.
It sure does.
But no, in all seriousness, the next 24 hours is just about making sure everyone in this city is safe. It's this is not a laughing matter as much as, stocked up on Kit Kats and you've got your noodles for the kids and everyone. Like, it's we just got to get through the next little part, and we'll be filing gold if we have internet. Hopefully there's no power outages, and hopefully everyone gets safe and we can get back to the rugby sooner than later, eh?
Hear, hear. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We will come to you again on Saturday night, hopefully, and hopefully we can connect. I don't think, Tom, I think it might be another remote one. I don't think we're going to be able to. We have all been advised to stay in our accommodation, stay indoors at all times, all through Saturday from dawn till well into the night. So this will be another remote one. So apologies for the audio quality, dear listeners, but as Tommy said, the priority is staying safe, and we'll definitely have a lot of atmosphere and a few anecdotes for you, and I'll be able to tell you whether we could find some masking tape to tape our own windows.
I thought the Herald had a bunker in Tokyo. Maybe we could find that and have a few beverages. Maybe
I think
not.
In this era of media rationalisation, there might be a freelancer or two, but other than that, it's Beijing.
Very good. All right, you stay safe, G. I'll chat to you tomorrow, eh?
Sayonara.
Sayonara.